Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The American Repertory Theatre welcomes a new executive director today, Diane Quinn, who joins ART after 11 years with Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas. The new hire is the latest in a series of significant shifts in the Boston theatre scene, from the parting of ways between Boston University Theatre and the Huntington Theatre Company, to the end of Citibank's sponsorship of the Wang and the Schubert, to the temporary closing of the Colonial. Now, all of that may sound pessimistic, but we still have vibrant shows from the Huntington's A Confederacy of Dunces to Speakeasy Stage Company's Casa Valentina to the Boston Ballet's seasonal classic The Nutcracker. Nevertheless, we think it's worth asking, what is the future of the theater scene in Boston? And are the changes we mentioned earlier, are they setbacks or just transitions or maybe something else? So call us with your thoughts about the present and future of the Boston theater scene. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us at Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Well, joining us now is Michael Masso. He's managing director of the Huntington Theatre Company. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Also with us is Graham Wright, founder of Opus Affair. Graham, good to have you back as well.
Great to be here.
So, Michael and Graham, we'll talk about the Huntington in more detail in just a minute, but I wanted to start with sort of that big picture question about, you know, your assessment about the state of the theatre scene in Boston. I listed a bunch of changes. Should we be feeling pessimistic now, Michael? I'll start with you.
Well, I think it's a great time for theater in Boston. I think there's more companies doing terrific work than there ever have been along the wide range of theater companies, from the smallest theater companies to companies like the Huntington and ART. And there's really, this is a great time to be a theatrical consumer. It's the best time ever to be theater artists in Boston. And I think there's confusion because a lot of the headlines have been made by about theaters, but they're very, very different kind of theaters in this world, there are very distinct issues that are being addressed, which are really separate issues and unique and individualized
to each individual theater.
Yes, yeah. And they don't really relate to each other.
Okay. Well, Graham, I was looking in the Boston Globe, and they write about the fact that there seems to be as they put it, a suite of new pressures on places like the Boston theater scene, which include new audience desires, colleges' academic needs, and of course there's the red-hot real estate market in Boston, which might also be playing a role here. So what's your take on what we're seeing happening?
Sure. There are a lot of new pressures here, but they didn't just bubble up out of nowhere. You know, I think with all of these stories that hit the news cycle around the same time, none of them came out of nowhere. You know, the people who've been working hard on creating this, you know, the great theater scene in Boston have been preparing for a lot of these things already. And these other pressures, the audience pressures, yes, they exist, but they, you know, they've been building for a long time. Similarly, you know, the real estate market, hot as could be, but also building for a while. So I think part of the message here is, yes, this seems very sudden if you're on the outside a little bit, but if you've been on the inside, you've felt this building for a while. So I think there shouldn't be too much of a knee-jerk to say, oh my God, there's terrible things happening in the theater industry. Like Michael was saying, there's such wonderful productions happening, and it's never really been a better time for producing theater in a lot of ways. But at the same time, I do think there should be this call to action from the audience perspective that we can't just be complacent and assume our city will continue to have all these things that we've benefited from for so long.
Okay, interesting. So, Michael, respond to that. I mean, do you feel or hear that call to action from the audience perspective?
Well, first of all, let me just be clear that the separation that's going on is from Boston University separating from what is now called the Boston University Theater, which has been the home of the Huntington for 33 years. The Huntington is still in pursuit of that building. We want to stay in our home. We are part of the process of people who are trying to buy that theater, either on our own or in partnership.
But BU rejected your offer, did it not?
BU and the Huntington were exclusively in negotiations, and then what BU decided is that it had to go on the open market. But we will pursue it both on our own and with a partner. So that the notion of who will actually own the property is really up in the air. There certainly has not been determined the notion that the Huntington won't be there. We have a very good chance of being there. If that doesn't work, then we will figure out plan B. But we are pursuing very aggressively the property to this date.
Okay. Well, so tell us then, what do you see, or what role do you see, you know, larger established theater companies like the Huntington, what role do they play in, you know, supporting smaller theater groups or productions in Boston? I'm just wondering, you know, because Graham was saying a little earlier, this didn't come out of nowhere, that people who've been in the world sort of have been watching things ebb and flow. So help us take us further into that then.
Let me try to do that specifically with the Huntington. And so it's why this issue is so important. It's why it's so important that at the end of the sale process, we remain in that theater. Right now, the Huntington serves 200,000 people a year in two venues, the BU Theater and the Calderwood Pavilion, which we built in 2004. And we serve those people. In addition to 30,000 young people, we have relationships with 150 nonprofits that serve limited income families in order to get them tickets at the least possible price. And speaking specifically to your point, in the Calderwood Pavilion, we serve a few dozen theater companies every single year. Mm-hmm. If we actually wind up not having a large-scale home for any extended period of time, the negative consequences on the audience, on the cultural life of Boston, and on the theater companies we serve is very real.
Right. So, Graham, respond to this then. In a Boston Globe op-ed earlier this month, Julie Burrows wrote that the fundamental problem is not that we are losing seats, as most of the press coverage and hand-wringing would have people believe. Rather, we have too many of one kind of seat and not enough of another. So she's pointing to a diversity of theater productions or types of seats as a problem.
Yeah, I think that's quite accurate. You know, he's specifically talking about, say, the Colonial, or you know, when the recent discussion of Boston Lyric Opera changing its relationship with the Schubert. You know, these are all very large theaters, many of which make their business with touring Broadway shows and large productions coming in. We have there's always this, you know, supply and demand, even a nonprofit theater. You know, we can resist those market factors a little bit more than commercial theater can, a good bit more, but eventually there are limits, you know. And where there is quite a lot of demand for space but not a lot of supply is in this midsize. And actually, I think the BU Theater is, for that reason, a critical space that, just as Michael was saying, a lot of companies depend on it beyond just the Huntington.
To add to that, the distinction that Julie is making is between theaters where people produce plays and theaters where they rent out their space to others. The market for renting to New York touring shows is the one where there are too many seats.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But those of us who produce plays, whether it's the Huntington, whether it's all the companies we serve at the Calderwood, whether it's the local operas that have used the Huntington in recent years, to BLO. BLO is a producing organization and has need and has audience. I have an enormous number of audience members. We have two theaters that are used all year long, and that's the kind of theater that we have to protect.
Well, we're talking about the present and future of Boston's theater scene. You're listening to Michael Masso. He's managing director at the Huntington Theater Company, and Graham Wright, founder of Opus Affair. And we'd love to hear from you. What's your take on the health of the Boston theater scene? Are you a regular theater goer around town? Have you seen it change? What would you like to see? Not just in terms of the kinds of productions and shows, but the theater companies themselves, or even the locations where these productions are staged. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And maybe there's also a bigger question here about how much should the city, how much should we be supporting theater as a major part of the artistic expression and the cultural health of Boston? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Twitter at Radio Boston. Gentlemen, if you stand by for just a second, I want to pull in another voice into the conversation briefly. He's Spiro Veloudos, and he's producing artistic director at the Lyric Stage Company. Spiro, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you very much. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Hey, Spiro.
Well, I'm just wondering, Spiro, why don't you pick up where we just left off about kind of the types of seats and the types of theaters and where you see the Lyric falling into all of that?
Well, I have to agree with Michael. Julie was talking about specific types of seats, and I think that the Broadway roadshow companies are dwindling. Excuse me, because of just the finances of putting together a roadshow and coming into a city like Boston. So those seats are starting to dwindle. That's why I think you're seeing, you know, Emerson College thinking about repurposing the Colonial. Hmm. I only throw all of my support behind Michael's effort to hold on to the BU Theater, because I think that it's a jewel of a theater in Boston, and it needs the loving care that I think a company like the Huntington can give it. The Lyric is in a very unique position, I think. We're one of the few companies of our size that controls our own space. We have a very, very good relationship with our landlord, the YWCA. And, you know, we've been there since 1991. So, you know, we've got some longevity in that space. And, you know, I'm going into my 20th year as the producing artistic director of the company. So we have a real historical background for the mid-sized theater in Boston.
Right.
Over the last 20 years, I think you've seen a big proliferation of the medium-sized companies and certainly the small and fringe companies. So there's a lot of theater going on in Boston. And I'd like to just to respond to the question that you had for your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I think theater is a vital part of Boston's artistic scene. Now, that's a little self-serving, admittedly. but I really, if you look around, theater is very vibrant in this city. And, you know, again, to say pretty much what Michael said, this is a great time for the theater, for the young theater artist in this area, which wasn't so true 20 years ago.
Right. Well,
but now it is.
Well, Spiro, if you can hang on for just a second.
Of course.
There's a caller who's speaking to exactly this point. I'd love to welcome him in. Wyatt is calling from Roxbury. You're on the air, Wyatt.
Yes, hi. Great show, fantastic topic. I think what we're looking at now is really an optimization of our theater scene in Boston, and I've been a part of that since 1980 when I used to work at the Metropolitan Theater back when it first opened with Sweeney Todd and then all of the other theaters of Schubert and so on. I just wanted to ask a specific question about the city's support to the theater district. What's your sense of what the new mayor is doing? I know Mayor Menino, before he passed away, helped us. I think it's called Fiddlehead, I believe.
Right. He did he did quite a few things. But go ahead, Wyatt.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get a sense of the what's happening from City Hall and how are they supporting this wonderful scene we have here. And do you get the sense that it's going to get better, or are the funds kind of stabilized?
Right. Well, Wyatt, thank you so much for your call. And Michael, let me turn to you on that, because you know, we were doing our homework on this and remembered that Mayor Menino saved the Paramount, the Modern Theater, and the Opera House from demolition. And then, check me on this, but I think the Hunting was also able to get the second stage at the Calderwood.
The Calderwood
with
Pavilion.
The mayor's help.
Sure, we had the help of Mayor Menino, Harry Collings at the BRA. The city was very involved in the Calderwood. Being created on the Boston Center for the Arts campus. So they were critically important in making that happen
and
as well.
And to Wyatt's question about City Hall now?
Right now, the city, there are people in economic development, certainly Julie Burrows, and the mayor himself all understand. I can tell you specifically, they totally understand the importance of the Huntington continuing our work. And they are deeply committed to making sure that we get as good a crack as possible at staying in our theater.
Some people think commitment is good, but commitment doesn't necessarily translate into action. I mean, Shirley Leung in The Globe wrote that that she sees a lack of robust public response from City Hall to recent developments in the theater world. Graham, I mean, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, when a lot of people say they're waiting for action, they mean they're waiting for funding. And if that's the case, you know, I think they probably ought to look elsewhere first. You know, and I don't really know what they have, what the mayor's office has as that will be an end result of all the cultural planning process they're doing now. But I do think that typically when people say they're waiting for action, they say they're waiting for funding. And there's quite a lot of factors that have to play into that conversation.
Well, Spiro, let me turn back to you because, you know, as you had mentioned before we went to that caller, you've been doing this at the Lyric Stage Company for a long time now. But looking forward, I mean, if you could have, you know, any dream come true in terms of something that the Boston theater scene needs or could do with, what would it be?
Well, I think the biggest issue is space, and not just performing space, but rehearsal space. I've said this at a number of different places. Art is not created in the performance space. It's created in the rehearsal. And that's what we have to start looking at. There is a, you know, there are companies that literally squat in some college campuses, hoping that the security guard doesn't come by to throw them out of their rehearsal. So that issue of space is really critical. I think that the city needs to look at, and I'm going to use the Calderwood as the great example of this. What happened to the South End and that part of the South End after the Calderwood Pavilion opened?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I remember back in the near dark ages when I first started working in Boston theater of rehearsing down at the Boston Center for the Arts and not leaving by ourselves.
Right.
Because it was a dangerous area. And now you have, you know, this boulevard of the arts, as I like to sometimes call it, and say, you know, you've got all these really wonderful galleries that are happening in the Boston Center for the Arts. You've got all these great restaurants that are happening there. So the city and frankly, the state, I think, need to look at the economic development mm-hmm. of areas like that.
Well, can I add one thing?
Yeah. And actually, for a second, let me just jump in here because, Spiro, I'm afraid I've got to let you go here because we're running down on time. But,
no problem.
But I wanted to say thank you so much, Spiro Velidos, who's the producing artistic director at the Lyric Stage Company. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking. And Michael, see you soon, I'm sure.
Thank you. Take care, Spiro. I do want to just jump in and just echo that because the Huntington's intention on Huntington Avenue is not just to stay where we are, but it's to invest tens of millions of dollars in the renovation of the BU Theater, which has enormous amounts of deferred maintenance, and to create another space adjacent to it, which will serve in just like the Calderwood Pavilion to enliven the neighborhood and to provide services to community organizations.
Right. So finally, Graham, I wanted to ask you something in particular because you're the founder of Opus Affair. It has been so successful. I mean, you were drawing thousands, right? Can we say thousands of people to Opus Affair events?
We've certainly had thousands over the years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I mean, I think that the success of Opus Affair, what do we call it? Like it's a salon for people who love the arts?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
I like that.
But it's proving that obviously there's a great passion for people of virtually any age, not just here, but in the other cities where Opus Affair has launched, to really plug into the artistic and cultural scene in the city. So it's not as if the people feel lukewarm about it. So my question to you is, how do we then better leverage or transfer that passion into theater, into people actually sitting in the seats for the many productions that we started talking about?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the conversation I'm having time and time again at our events, you know, chatting with friends and colleagues. You know, I'm very excited when someone says, oh, I signed a petition because I'm very passionate about this. Well, usually my next question is, well, have you bought a ticket to see anything yet?
Yeah.
And
retweets don't necessarily equal seats.
Yeah, and I'm very excited when people are charged up and want to sign petitions and tweet. And that's a good first step. But, you know, we can't just sit back and assume that somebody is going to rescue all of these spaces that we want our city to have. So the next step is, yeah, buy a ticket. show that you actually there's some demand for these things that we want our city and cultural institutions to supply.
Right. No more social media, you know, activism.
Well, it's not that we need to cut that out. Just it's
or
step one.
Make it real.
Make sure there's step two.
Well, Graham Wright is founder of Opus Affair. It is always great to have you on the show, Graham. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And Michael Masso, managing director of the Huntington Theater Company, thank you as well for coming in today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, keep this conversation going. Send us a tweet at Radio Boston on your view of the health and future of the Boston theater scene. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.